Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives. On this week's program, three university students with advice to Alaska Native high school students. Dee Olin telling about the image of Alaska Natives in the lower 48 and some genuine Eskimo music. Let's begin with the Eskimo music. The University of Washington Press gave us permission to play for you music compiled by Lorraine Coranda. The Eskimos composed songs for nearly every activity of their lives. Among the most important were the weather and power songs. Successful hunting trips, safe voyage and return, and the abundance of game might depend on the weather. The weather song, called Seal Hyaf Sun, were composed either by a shaman called Angat Hok or by someone else with unusual power or influence. Many of them invoked the name of Sila, the spirit of air, weather, and the universe, explained as a power that can be taken possession of by men, a power personified in Sila Inua, the lord of power, or literally, he who possesses power. Weather power songs could be purchased, but had to be used with discretion, so their power would not be abused. Many Eskimos have testified to their efficacy, and there are many who believe that weather can be controlled or affected by the singing of these songs, because they know that this has happened in the past. Here is a story about a ptarmigan who owned the weather power song and taught it to an Eskimo, as told and sung by Paul Green of Kotzebue and Nome. Once upon a time, there was a ptarmigan who was going around and around, flying up the creek and down. Pretty soon he got into a storm, so he ducked into the snow and stayed there. He stayed covered up under the snow. He put a little hole on top of his little snow house and looked around to see how the weather was, but it kept storming. And then the ptarmigan felt kind of hungry. He was getting hungry, and there was no place to eat where he was. So he thought he might sing for the weather to become good. He sang, "I am displeased with this bad weather. I am real hungry. I am real thirsty. I pray for good weather to come tomorrow." The ptarmigan went to sleep after he sang the song. The next morning when he woke up, the weather was nice, sunny and warm. So he went out and started feeding himself. This story and song were meant to entertain the children, but most of the weather songs that we will hear have the serious purpose of helping the Eskimo in his fight to survive the harsh environment in which he lives. The next story and song are told and sung by Jimmy Keelig Evok of Point Hope. And this song is called Kong Yok Siyuki, a song long ago an Eskimo named Kong Yok Siyuki was caught in a severe storm while he was out fishing. He could not walk against the wind. He could not build himself a shelter. He had no food and was close to starving. Suddenly, through the storm, Kong Yok Siyuki saw a mysterious snow-shrouded figure. It appeared to be a man with a shovel and an axe. Kong Yok Siyuki sneaked up behind the figure, stole his axe, and with it was able to cut blocks for a snow shelter for himself. The stranger followed and found Kong Yok Siyuki. He sang through the skylight, "Kong Yok Siyuki, give me my big axe. Give me my axe and tomorrow you'll see bright sunshine, green grass, and sparrows." Kong Yok Siyuki the axe and threw it out. Next day he awoke to the spring beauty the mysterious visitor had promised. Later, the stranger's song was sung again to stop a storm, and it did. The second selection we'll hear will be Kong Yok Siyuki's song. Before the boats were launched for a whaling expedition, many rites were observed and special songs were sung for the safeguarding of the men and the success of the hunt. Whaling was, and still is, a dangerous occupation. and it was necessary to call upon supernatural powers to keep the men safe, bring the whale into range for the hunt, and ensure the successful harpooning of the huge animal. Jimmy Kil-Ig-Ivok also sings a well-remembered ancient shaman song from Point Hope, which is still considered a good omen for the sea hunt. When the boats, the harpoon guns, and the lines were ready, and the men were prepared to start on their dangerous mission, an old shaman sat down on the ice, put on his mukluks and gut parka, and sang, "I want all these animals. I want the white fox, I want the red fox, I want the seal, the ugric, the walrus, and I want the whale." So the three songs we'll hear. The first, the ptarmigan song. The second, Konyok-Siyok-Gi's song. And the third, the shaman's hunting song. High school students get a lot of advice on how to study. Much of this advice comes from people of another generation. Alaska Native high school students may get this advice from people of another culture. So I asked three Alaska Native students to give advice to high school students of their own region. Henry Napoleon from Hooper Bay graduated from St. Mary's High School last spring. He tells about coming to college from St. Mary's.
These past few years, the university has been coming up with ideas like Upward Bound, and that kind of prepares them how it operates. They get an idea of how college is. They maybe stay about a month. They go to class like any university student. Well, they get the feel of college, you know.
Henry now offers this advice to high school students on the west coast of Alaska.
Study good.
A third-year student in the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Linda DeWitt, is a graduate of Wrangell High School.
The type of advice I'd give to the students down there would be to study more than what you're expected to learn in high school, especially the high school I came from. When I first came up here, well, not so much up here, but when I went to college down south, I really felt unprepared in the type of work that I had to do. Maybe it was just myself, but generally, I would say for every student that wants to go to any university or college should take the required courses naturally, but extra things like typing and speech and more science courses than what they want to take.
Linda said her high school teachers would
what's the difference between high school and college and what to expect. And so it wasn't that much of an adjustment for me, you know, because like I went to Sheldon Jackson College in Sitka, which is a very small college. It has a student body of 200 to 300. That was really nice because you met students mainly from Alaska. And then I came up here to the university, and the hardest thing I had to get used to was the weather. You know, because it's so dry and cold up here.
Peggy Faverstrom comes from Golovin along the Bering Coast. In her third year at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Peggy is majoring in office administration.
What I'd like to tell students that are just coming to college is to kind of prepare themselves for being away from their, well, the guidance of their parents, because when you get here, you're pretty much well on your own. And of course you have your resident advisors, but they don't tell you when to come home and when to study, so you'd have to kind of get accustomed to making up your own study habits. And as for activities, you have movies on weekends and small weekend activities like dances and stuff, but you're pretty much well on your own if you want to go to those activities or if you just enjoy staying home and listening to music, I suppose.
High school and college is generally grade students. I asked Peggy to reverse that process and grade the performance of her high school in preparing her for college.
Well, I suppose a B, because I wasn't going to come to college, and then when I did come, I wasn't prepared for the math courses I'd have to take or the science courses. And in high school, we were only required, you know, like general math and a couple years of science. And if you're in high school, it would be best, you know, if you took all the math courses you could possibly get and science courses just as well. And I went to a boarding school, so I was pretty well accustomed to living in a dorm and being on my own.
Next, she rates the services of the University of Alaska Fairbanks in the classroom and out of the classroom.
Pretty good. Well, I suppose a B again. It's pretty good here. The setup about it, the way it's set up, the classes aren't very large. Of course, you get into some classes where there's about 100 students. That you get used to that. And then as you go on, sophomore, junior, senior, you get into classes where there's just about 20, 30 students, and you can pretty well get to know the professor and students around you.
Henry Napoleon rates his high school, St. Mary's.
The other high schools I went to, I've heard about, you know, they hardly give homeworks and stuff like that. Here at St. Mary's, you get term papers, stuff like college things, the essays, reports, research papers. You learn all those things and you put into use. It worked me good. They got me kind of set up for college.
Okalina Schwartz is in her second year at the university.
I've been hearing a lot of complaints about some of the courses that they've been dropping. You know, like some people are majoring in going into dental assistants and things like that, and they're not offering those courses. But overall, I think for, you know, major businesses like business administration or office administration, those major points are covered very well, you know. But for some students, it isn't very good, you know, because all they do is get their background, but they don't get the interest fields that they want. And I think that's sort of graded a B. I went to high school in Mount Edgecombe, and I'd grade that pretty, a C, definitely. They were a little too lax, you know. They should have been a little harder on the students, you know, because in college you have to take notes and you have to listen to lectures. And, you know, like in high school, most high schools, you know, they just give you homework and they say, well, you read this and you do that. But then they don't give lectures, you know, where you can take notes and things. They don't teach you how to take notes. And so when you're thrown into a classroom and you sit there, but then you don't realize that you're supposed to be taking notes, because most of the tests are going to be taken from the lectures along with the material that's assigned. And I think that's mainly what I had problems with when I first got here. There are quite a few students down there, you know. It's a boarding student, and I imagine there's, when I was there, the enrollment was something like 650 to 700, and I think it's still like that. But all in all, it was good. Most of these high schools are sort of catering to the natives, you know. They give these special classes for natives. And I don't think that's right, because that doesn't really prepare you for college. You know, like, they give you English class or something, you know, and it's relatively easy. All right, that's fine, if you don't have any background at all in English. But when you get into college, you know, the professors aren't going to give you any special treatment or anything. You've got to conform, you know. And I don't think it's right that they should be given such mediocre.
Brown, there's a
Speaking of hazy shades of winter and brown leaves and back to school, Dee Olin, born in Ruby, is now studying at the University of Oregon in a pre-med course. To earn money for college, she worked this past summer on the riverboat Discovery in Fairbanks. She told how tourists reacted to her when they learned that she was an Alaska native.
The one main question that they always asked was there any real difference between the Eskimos and the Indians? Their first impression about Alaska was that there were mostly Eskimos here and we still lived in igloos. They had no idea that there were five other ethnic groups besides Eskimos here. And then when they did come to the interior and they found a lot of Athabascan Indians, well, they wanted to know how were we related to the Eskimo. So that was just about their number one question. I would like to see the point put across that there are not only Eskimos and Indians here, but, you know, that there are six ethnic groups altogether, and that we're all people up here, and we live no different than anybody else would have done if they were in our shoes. You know, we're not strange. We're all human beings. And that the way that we do things up here is simply because of our environment. You know, people look in amazement, you know, that we dry moose meat or, you know, we smoke fish and so forth, which if they were in our shoes, they would have done the same thing, you know, just to survive. And I think that's a point I'd like to see put across. Also that we are not as ignorant as everybody thinks. There are a lot of Alaska Natives who are thriving to keep their culture going.
In Oregon, she found that
the one big reaction after they found out that I was from Alaska was that, oh, you must be really wealthy. You know, that was their first thing. See, down there they have the Klamath Indians, and they have a huge settlement, you know, and they get, what do they call them, something close to dividends, and which are large amounts of money. So they look at the Indians down there, and they look at the Alaska Natives up here, and they think that we're getting the same deal, you know, that we're going to get, oh, $28,000 every 3 months or, you know, something to that effect. That's the big impression, that we are really just raping the government, I guess. I think that there is a lot of sincere interest. People like to know about different cultures. You know, they like to know how we were set up, how we do things, you know, how we are able to survive in this, no other word for it, but bitter cold, you know, during the winter. And they look in amazement at some of the things that we've had to resort to. But they really do have a sincere interest. And I've met a lot of people down there who have asked me a lot of questions, you know, about the early history of the Indians. What were some of our customs? You know, what were some of the tools that we used? And none of it was ever laughed at. You know, it was all done in sincerity. And I just felt good, you know, educating a few people about the Alaska Natives. Oh, there's definitely a lot of interest. You know, most people look at Alaska, you know, as the last frontier, you know, that we don't have a lot of air pollution and water pollution. They look at it as, you know, a big, vast state with not too many people. They just look at it and say, gee, I wish I could live in Alaska. And that's how most of the people that I've met look at it. A lot of people down in Oregon, you know, they would ask me, you know, well, how high, what level of education, you know, did my folks receive? And my mother, Lillian, just got to high school, and she didn't continue. And my stepfolks in Ruby, Lorene and John Honey, they both got to about the sixth grade. And that was their level of education, which they have worked with, you know, for, dad's going to be 64, and she's 54, you know, so for years, you know, they've had that level of education. But to me, they have their doctorate, you know, past their master's in fishing and trapping. And knowing about the land, how to survive on it, you know, that is a skill all in itself. And people just don't seem to realize it, you know. They just, you know, they look at you and they want to see your sheepskin or something like that. And some people just don't realize that there are a lot of Alaska Natives here who could really teach quite a bit, you know, about their culture. You know, they have already reached the highest possible level of education in our culture, I think.
KUAC, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska. Please remember, this is your program. Tell us what you want to hear. Write to KUAC, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.